Chapter 17.
Orlinor, Gorkagrod Throne Room. Corlin stepped forward. An uncommon thrill of anticipation passed through him, an electric shiver, as if his body had been conditioning itself these past weeks and months to the cocktail of emotions that the moment of triumph would bring. Corlin's gene heritage would not let his face show it. He could not, in fact, remember the last time he had truly laughed or even smiled from his heart, though he assumed that he had once. Even on frozen death worlds, mortal children still laughed, and as the Emperor's distant light was his judge and witness, they always would. Beaumont moved across his path, a pace ahead, sword raised, as if to bar Corlin from the beast, and vice versa, with his body and with his blade.
"You would be my champion now as well," said Corland on a private channel. "I am Lord Commander. It is my right to face the beast alone."
With a gruff murmur of assent, Beaumont ponderously backed up and lowered his blade until the tip scraped the mosaic tiles in front of him. Corland watched him go, nodded his gratitude, though no one could see it behind his fixed helm and gorget, and caught Cavallinera's gesture.
"Now?"
Corlin could guess that the beast had some understanding of Low Gothic, but he doubted the greenskins were familiar with Adeptus Astartes' battle sign. He moved his hugely armored fingers in reply. "Not yet." It was as complex a message as sign language could convey while wearing Terminator armor, but the Night Abyssal signaled her understanding. She gestured to Laurentis. The orc psyker thrashed against the armory servitors as Laurentis scuttled warily through a stim dose slurping into a hypodermic appendage. At the door, Alpha 13 Jazar and the Ogrins were still battling to hold the orcs back. "The harder we hit them," Corlin thought, "the stronger the psychic field becomes. The harder we hit them."
"I am Slaughter," said Corlin, turning to the beast. "I am the Lord Commander of the Imperium of Man, and I have come to kill you."
The beast did not laugh. It should have done, but it did not. It swung up its arm. An impossible array of firepower had been assembled into a triple-tiered gantry around its wrist. Two bolted-together battle cannons formed the mainstay. That twin link was surrounded by autocannons, heavy flamers, rocket launchers, and multi-barreled weapons of orc make that Corlin had never seen on any battlefield and could not identify. Ammo belts and power hoses swung side to side as it took aim. It barely had to. In its open gauntlet was a pulsing trigger switch, omni-linked to that awesome battery. It clenched its fist. Thunder struck. A star was born. Worlds collided. Asger's emergency vox blinked up an unnecessary warning on Corlin's helm display the same moment he felt Beaumont's shoulder guard barge him out of the way. The firestorm that engulfed the Black Templar would have rivaled a super-heavy tank squadron. Corlin did not see it fall. He was already stumbling away under Beaumont's shove, the blast that struck still mighty enough to throw him down and shatter the lens of his right eye. Power failed to numerous systems and was rerouted. Servo's word, as Fidus Bellator, aided its wearer in driving their mammoth weight back up. He looked back. Beaumont was broken, leaking sealant. The mosaic he covered was pulverized. His rune in Corlin's fractured visor was a warning amber. The orcs looking on bellowed thunderous approval, stamped their feet, beat their fists on the iron handrails. The galleries trembled, but the engineering expertise on display was sound, and there was no danger of their stanchions buckling. Asger flourished his lightning claws and howled back at them. Krul was more forthright. The assassin lifted his executioner pistol and drilled a mass-reactive round through an orc's head. The explosive bolt burst through the back of its skull, and the orc pitched over the rail and thumped into the floor. For half a second, the jeering stopped. Then the beast gave a roar that could have cracked armor glass, and as though it were the blow that shattered the dam, the orc elites began pounding down the stairs. Corland gave a tight little smile. Yes, hit them harder. The beast clanked through the pall of its own almighty weapons discharge. Autoloaders clicked and whirred, barrels spun off heat, drum hoppers chewed through belts. Little hatches opened up in the brute's armor, rubber conveyors porting heavier ordnance towards the battle cannons and rocket launchers. Corland emptied his storm bolter's clip into the gantry, seeking a weak spot in the array of loader mechanisms, but the mass reactive explosions rippled purple-green across an energy field about a meter ahead of the Great Orc's armor. The effect rose diagonally along the beast's chest as Corland traversed his aim and moved ponderously aside. Keep moving. Fidus Bellator had kept him alive this long, but it was a millstone now, denying him the one advantage that might have bought him as much time as he needed, maneuverability. The beast opened up as it closed the distance. Auto-rounds and stabbing bolts of green energy mauled the tiles around Corland's boots and burst against his armor. The beast broke into a thumping run, hollering even as its wrist battery kicked out a storm of abuse, muzzle flare lighting up its face like a tusked horror from a nightmare. Corland aimed the last round in his magazine and fired, aiming for the eye. The mass reactive burned up in a vibrant death against the energy shield. Corland backed ponderously to mitigate what he could of the great beast's forward momentum. He brought his power sword to a position of guard. As it had been for Vulcan, so too then for him. The fate of mankind would be decided hand to hand. The orc swung up its combat weapon. It was a spiked vibro mace, its head the size of a space marine. The haft was twice as long as Corland. The arm added half that length again. All of it swung at Corland with Primarch killing force. He was too slow to avoid it, and he knew without needing to try that a parry would not even be worth the attempt. He was not a Primarch. The mace struck him in the shoulder and launched him across the chamber like a kicked stone. The vibroblast was a parting gift, an extra meter or so of lift and a drilling numbness down the arm before he smashed into the wall. He fell to the floor on hands and knees, dust crumbling over his shoulders. Targeting reticules spilled over the spidery cracks in his faceplate as they sought locks. His armor emitted a complaining whine as he struggled to get himself back up. The harder we hit them. If only Corland knew how to hit them. Tyrus flicked his bolter's shot selector to automatic. It felt like time. Orcs were flooding down the stairs from the galleries, through arches flanked by sentinel gargants, and into the throne room in their hundreds. He raked one stair, picking his shot still even as his trigger finger kicked them out faster than a mortal man could follow. One orc dropped with a bolt through the mouth, mass reactive explosion blasting its skull back out through its visor, but the rest of the clip clanged off thick armor and rippling force fields. The beast aside, they were the biggest greenskins he had ever seen. He reloaded.
Simias, straighten! Cover left! Gadriel, forward! Ice grip, with me!
The warriors of Stalker were a firebase, a wall of bolter fire, but the orcs were too big and too well armored to be held at bay. Cavalinera and her sisters sallied and drew back, fighting like warrior angels to defend the orc psyker. Tyrus had known they could fight, but finally unleashed, they were magnificent. They killed like bolts from the heavens, righteous judgment withdrawn the instant it was delivered to leave the orcs railing at smoke or left for another ephemeral hand to strike down. Watching Cavalinera herself was like watching the armored avatar of Silent Death summoned forth for one final battle in the Emperor's name. The enormous servitors did not fight, and for that reason the orcs had not thought to attack them yet. They were like stakes in the ground. Laurentis hid behind one, lashing out with a converted power emitter, arcs of current that the rampaging greenskins did not even feel. At the door, the fight had never stopped. Commissar Goss's chainsword banged furiously against an orc's armor, adamantium teeth fighting for purchase like a man running on ice. He foamed at the mouth, cap on the floor somewhere, grey hair streaming wild as he discharged his plasma pistol into the orc's chest. It ignored the shot, hacked off the commissar's arm with its own whining axe blade, then delivered a boot to the chest that broke the man and heaped him on the ground 3 meters back. Olug bellowed fury and mashed the butt of his ripper gun through the orc's face. Brock held the door single-handedly, wrestling with a mega-armored orc almost his size. The strain on both faces was incredible. Even over the chaos of melee, Tyrus could hear matched sinews creak. Alpha 13 Jazal coolly raked the orc mobs with plasma until an axe smashed through the back of his exoskull. The Skitari Ranger dropped with an electrical shiver and then self-destructed. an ultra-near-range implosion from a subdermal melter device taking out his killer's arm. Asger finished the orc with a decapitating sweep. His lightning claws crackled and spat. The wolf lord's howl echoed from the rapidly emptying galleries. It was drowned out by the rumble of engines. The great gargant standing sentinel around the throne dais revved to full power. Exhaust stacks belched black smoke. Not, Tyri suspected, because the orcs lacked the technological capability to engineer something cleaner, but because they enjoyed the sense of power that only a rumbling engine gave. With a discordant blast of warhorns, the war machines started haphazardly forward. Now, Tyrus voxed, though he doubted Courland was in a position to respond. Courland pushed himself fully upright back to the wall as the beast thudded towards him and swung. Courland dropped heavily to one knee. The mace blew the wall apart. Vibrations drove deep cracks as high up as the gallery above his head. It swayed alarmingly as several brackets popped their bolts. He stabbed at the beast's belly. It did not even bother to block. The power field nullified the sword's disruption field, and the blade skittered harmlessly over riveted plates. The beast used its wrist battery like knuckle dusters, 2-ton knuckle dusters worn by a giant. The blow hammered so hard into Corlin's faceplate that it fried the shock circuits and smacked his head back into the padding. He crunched into the wall. The rim of the helmet bit through the gorget soft seals. Atmosphere hissed in, and Corlin's visually augmented array went black. On the second effort, he managed to tear the helm from the mangled gorget, then gave a deep roar of defiance as the beast's knee crushed into his plastron. Fidus Bellator, cracked like a block of stone, struck along a plane of weakness. The breath was forced from his chest, his multi-lung supplying his physiology with oxygen in its absence. Systems alerts, mechanical and biological, blurted from mangled audio sounders in his gorget rim. The beast ground him under its knee. Courland gritted his teeth, partially buried in rubble, and calmly ejected his storm bolter's empty magazine. The beast leveled its whirring wrist battery, not 10 centimeters from Courland's face. He did not blink. I defy you to my dying breath. Mankind defies you. A shriek of punctured metal startled him, expecting instant death as he was, and the dark blade of a power sword sheared through the giant orc's thigh plate from behind. Courland laughed then. The sword of Sigismund. The Black Templar's armor was cracked up the middle, marked by a jagged line of raw ceramite where it had been sealed. Sparks trailed from an exposed power cable near his elbow. He turned a twist on his relic blade and pulled it back. Blood sprayed. The beast arched its back and howled in pain. It lashed back with its vibro mace, but the surprise of being injured threw it off, and it failed to account for the fact that the High Marshal stood barely in line with its hips. The weapon sailed over Bormann's helmet, but the beast's knuckles nevertheless caught him a glancing blow that stunned his systems and crashed him to the floor. Blood from what must have been a severed artery in the beast's thigh continued to spurt across Corlin's body. Courland felt the pressure on his chest ease as the beast drew in its wounded leg. He stepped out of the wall, half fell. Damaged sections of armor powered down as he stood, the tremendous drag of his Terminator plate like pushing against a moon. He slotted a fresh sickle magazine into his empty storm bolter, dragonfire rounds, the nearest to hand. He looked up at the beast with eyes that swam in and out of focus. The harder we hit them, the stronger the psychic field grows. For Vulcan! He rasped, then opened a channel to Cavallonera. Now! The sister acknowledged with a click. I will relish this moment forever, beast. With Cavallonera leading, the sisters broke from combat. It was there that Curran saw the problem they had failed to foresee. The Sisters of Silence were mobbed in close combat by scores of the beast's bulkiest elites. Exquisitely as the women fought, as hard as Tyrus and Stalker fought to pull them out, they simply could not bring the armored hulks down fast enough to escape. Even so, Courland felt a buzz of escalating force that tightened the skin of his forehead. To Courland's astonishment, the staggered withdrawal actually appeared to be a boon in disguise. The Psyker was absorbing power slowly, soaking in far more than it could have, had it all come down on it in a rush. Its eyes rolled back, Its lids juddered as though electric current was being run through its chains. Froth boiled from its locked jaw. Veins bulged up from its body and turned a mouldy black as it seized uselessly in its restraints. Clutching its head, the beast turned round on its good leg. With a grunt, it raised its wrist battery and fired. The torrent of bullets and lasers and weird gravitic blasts mowed through two of the servitors and half a dozen orc elites. Suddenly released, the orc psyker flopped about on the floor like a suffocating fish. The bullet storm howled towards the seizing psyker and would have shredded it had not Trevina thrown herself into its path at the final second. She danced for a moment, then her ravaged body fell on top of the orcs and the barrage swept on. It took another crimson-armored sister in the knee and dropped her. She did not break her vows even to cry out. The beast cursed as its myriad barrels whined empty and the autoloaders set to work. The remaining Sisters of Silence continued their fighting withdrawal, and then, as their injured sister was still dragging herself away from the orc psyker, it detonated. The orc's mouth opened wide, a choking, gurgling sound trapped deep in its throat. Its head began to shake, like a loose bolt under pressure. Its eyes opened wide and bulged as though staring into the vivid core of the primordial annihilator. Corlin saw an ephemeral green shape swirl above the orc's head. Sparks flew from its nose. It arched itself on the floor, and then its head burst, slamming the back of it hard into the ground and spraying the mosaic tiles with blood and bits of skull. The psychic blast wave tore the flesh from the last servitor and whipped around the wounded sister like boiling water around a rock. Emerald lightning sprayed from the glistening nub of the orc psyker's exposed brainstem, like watching a weed flourish and die in accelerated playback, like current leaping from a broken wire in search of earth. It found it. Asger howled in triumph. Corland had strength left only to remain upright. That felt like triumph enough. Psychic feedback raced through the fighting orc mobs with the speed of lightning, a darting witch storm manifested by the Xenos's collective mind that reached through the eyes into their skulls and tore out their souls. It ripped through the mob, a chain of cranial detonations following messily where it passed. A blood spatter suddenly painted the greasy driver's window of a gargant from the inside. The war engines ground to a halt. One toppled over. Wet bursts and a pelleting sound, evocative of skull fragments on metal, sounded from the staircases leading up the galleries and the doors behind Olug and Brock. A snaking bolt snapped across the beast's tusked jaw, and it dropped to one knee, clutched the sides of its head in both hands, and gave vent to a howl of pure mental agony. Then it looked up at him and snorted. Its eyes flared like wild things. Something had gone wrong. The wounded sister. Corland aimed his storm bolter, range point blank, inside the beast's shield bubble and unloaded the entire magazine into the orc's face. Pyroclastic jelly burst over the orc's armor and burned. With a dribbling howl, it knocked the storm bolter from Corland's gauntlet with a swipe of its left hand. Largely unarmored and unpowered, Corland felt the reinforced bones of wrist, arm and shoulder shatter under the force. The storm bolter thumped into the wall and skidded off along the floor. His mind blacked itself out to block the pain. Everything vanished but the feel of the power sword in his other hand. The beast slumped back, dazed. Its face was molten wreckage, eyeless, nostrils merged into one flapping gill, wobbling polyps of congealed fat hanging from its lips. It was blind as Corlin drew his blade back one-handed, imbued it with every last straining sinew of Dawn's stubbornness, and then rammed it through the beast's open mouth. The great beast spasmed once, mighty enough even in its death throes to rip the sword's grip from Corlin's hands as it crashed, face first, into the tiles. And was still. The whole throne room was still. Corlin sank to the ground, a sudden weakness of the knees, flushing out the battle anesthesia that had kept him on his feet for far longer than this one encounter. It was done. He had done it. His brain was, if anything, as numb as his body, and it refused to process the magnitude of what that meant. He had succeeded where a Primarch had failed. They had succeeded. Through the jangling tinnitus in his ears, he heard Tyrus's shout of congratulation. He saw Krul saunter across, a smile on his face as he spat on the beast's corpse. Surprising that the assassin had been so close during the fight without Corland noticing. If he had to guess, he would say that Krul had been protecting him. Laurentis emitted a joyful data squeal, so overcome that he had slipped into Beinharrik. Asger howled, though not like before. This was for the dead, and for a victory to end all victories. It sent a shiver down Corland's spine, and he smiled for what felt like the first time in his post-human life, shaking with the withdrawal of adrenaline and the delayed creep-back of pain.
"We won," he said.
What more was there to say than that? Beaumont reared up over the fallen beast then, on his knees, and impaled the orc's heart with his blade. He sagged into it, took a moment, then withdrew a hand to disengage his helm's gorget seals. It came away with a hiss of magnetic suction, hands around the cross-hilt of his relic blade already on his knees. He bowed his head.
"The Primarch was right to entrust this role to you, brother. Forgive me my doubts, they were unworthy of a servant of the Emperor. What you have made be this day is the greatest victory since the destruction of Horus. If I achieve nothing more in my own service, it will be to see your name spoken for eternity in the same esteem as Sigismund himself."
Corland took his brother's hand, and the two space marines allowed their weight to help the other stand. The new Imperium began here. As Corland clasped the Black Templar's fizzling elbow seal to congratulate him in kind, he saw the great doors at the far, far end of the throne room thrown open. He heard clamoring alien voices, the clank of a giant armored stride, and knew that he had been wrong about everything.